welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the program that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm delighted to have on the programme University Matters today Dr. David Mifsud. Dr. Mifsud is a senior lecturer in biology at the Junior College. He's also president of the Entomological Society Malta. Dr. Mifsud gained his PhD in zoology from the University of Basel in Switzerland with a thesis work on the systematic and phylogeny of a group of insects commonly referred to as jumping plant lice. It'd be interesting to see what you wrote about plant lice. He has a keen interest in the entomofaunistics of the Maltese Islands and is particularly knowledgeable on the Hemiptera and the Coleoptera of the islands, but he's also published several papers on other insect groups. Other interests include plant parasitic nematodes and pathogenic fungi of Malta. Welcome to the program, Dr. Mifsud.
Welcome. Hello to all.
I tried to pronounce the things right, but you'll have to correct me if I went wrong anyway.
No, you were excellent, I would say.
Entomology, I think probably the best place to start is with a good old definition. Mm-hmm. What is entomology?
What is entomology? Yes, that's a very important question, I would say. Well, entomology is practically, in order to make it as simple as possible, is the study, everything that deals with the study of insects, you know. Insects form part of a much larger group known as arthropods, and these arthropods are characterized in two ways. They have an external skeleton, known as an exoskeleton, and apart from this morphological characteristic, they also have jointed appendages. In no other group of organisms you find these two unique characteristics. Jointed appendages, for example, antennae, walking legs, swimming legs, labial and maxillary pulps associated with the mouth so that they can use them in order to take in food. So these are all appendages to the body in no other group of insects. And what we have to say, also very important, is that this very large group, arthropods, represent more than 80% of all living biodiversity. At the moment, our knowledge about numbers of species, of living species or species that lived on planet Earth, is about, roughly it goes between 1.8 to 2 million described species. So they are known to science. There is a name, there is a description. Very often there is a type specimen that someone can go and look at and compare. And out of this number, out of this almost 2 million species, 80% of this falls within arthropods. And 60% are actually insects. So we are talking of the largest group of living organisms, not animals, organisms, on planet Earth.
So I imagine an entomologist such as yourself does have to specialize, because it's such a wide range.
It's very important, because if you don't specialize in a particular field or in a particular group, it's too large to try to do something, you know. Or at least you need to collaborate with various specialists in order to try to find new things. In fact, that's the way how in Malta we try to do it, you know. Obviously, I have my particular groups that I am interested in at world level, but then in order to search all other aspects, you cannot be an expert in everything. You cannot at this point in time.
what about what you study in entomology? I mean, we said that you did your PhD on these jumping plant lice, and I hasten to add that this is the generic name, the unpronounceable Latin name. What would you have actually looked into? What do you look into as an entomologist?
For that particular study, which was it was a three-year funded study, what I was looking at was mainly their morphology. Okay, I was trying to look at this group of organisms distributed in Southeast Asia and tropical Africa, and I was trying to see the differences and the similarities that they have in terms of morphology using adults, and also where available their larval and pupil characteristics. So the more you the more characteristics you have, the more information you have in order to create what is known as a phylogeny. What is a phylogeny? A phylogeny is that you try to elucidate their relationships, all right? This one is more closely related to this one than to the other one, all right? And this is very important because this group of insects that I have been studying is also strictly host plant specific. What does this mean? This means that species A lives only on plant A. Species B lives only on another different plant B. So if you manage to create a nice relationship between them, then this relationship that you try to put forward, you try to analyze it then in terms of their host plant. And if you are good in doing this, then the relationships from what you have examined to that of the host plant would very often coincide. And that's very exciting, I would say. That's very exciting.
When we talk about biodiversity in the insect world, I mean, you've spoken about the large number of insects that there are. Biodiversity is a bit of a buzzword nowadays.
Yes.
But it's very important in the insect world that there should be diversity
of course, among species. Biodiversity is a word that, as you said, everyone is talking about, but probably very few people know exactly what it entails. When we talk about insect biodiversity, as I told you, probably we have some 1 million described species of insects, but some colleagues of mine say that out there are probably more than 30 million species of insects that still need to be discovered. And this is especially so when you talk about the tropics and subtropics. You know, there is a diversity over there which overwhelms anything else, and this diversity is not yet studied. If we try to see the local context, even though we are not in a tropical country, actually we have a very limited fauna and flora, but what we have been doing for these past 5 years, for example, we have been publishing a journal devoted to entomophonistics of the Maltese fauna. Entomophonistics means the entomology, the fauna of insects in that particular territory. So we are talking about Malta. And in these 5 years, we've managed to put together more than 80 scientists from all over the world. These 80 scientists in total produced some 100 original research papers, all on Maltese insects. And we found out, in all these 5 years, we have given information on something like 1,500 different insect species. And out of this number, more than 400 were new to the Maltese territory, which is an incredible number. It's an 400, you know, in terms of flowering plants, we have about 800-900 species. So 400 new animals for Malta. It means half of the flowering plants in Malta, which is an enormous number. Out of these 400, two species were actually described for the very first time in the Maltese Islands. There are other publications, obviously, but at least now in this journal that we are producing in order to fulfill a vacuum that there was, we are trying to... So there, I'm sure that there is much and much more. My calculations are that probably, in terms of insects, on this very small island, with a population of more than 1,000 individuals per square kilometer, despite all this and despite the pressure from the touristic industry, I think that there should be more than 6,000 different species of insects. Mm-hmm. And out of all this, we know very little, very little.
One of the things that interests me when I read the article that you wrote in our Think magazine mm-hmm. was the binomial system.
Yes.
It interested me, not from the scientific mm-hmm. point of view, mm-hmm. but you've mentioned all these thousands and thousands of species. And there was Linnaeus, or Linus, I don't know,
yes.
I'm quite sure how to pronounce the uh-huh. Latin version of his name, created a category system,
yes.
binomial. What difference does that make to the ease with which they can be categorized?
All right. Well, this Swedish scientist, Carl von Linné, or Linnaeus now, it has been Latinized, he did something which was very important at the time. This was in the 1750s, okay? Prior to this date, scientists all over the world were trying to... Let's take an example so that everyone can understand. The carob tree, the Sidrat al-Harub, the carob tree. The British know it as a carob tree. We Maltese know it as Sidrat al-Harub. In Italy, they have another common name. But you can understand that people from China, people from South America, couldn't really understand what we are referring to when we use a common name. So there was the need of a system where all scientists around the world, with a name, they know exactly what we are referring to. This is particularly so because this biodiversity, as we have been saying, is so large, is so big. If this biodiversity was only for 20 different species only, okay, for 4 dogs, 2 trees, 2 lizards, and 2 insects, then there is no need of creating such a system. But because there is so much out there, probably 30 million different species, you need to categorize them. You need to give a unique name. And this unique name, this binomial is two names. This binomial is actually coming from a first name, which is a generic name, and this generic name can accommodate more than one species within it, with the morphological characteristics that you have in it, and then you have a species, so a genus and a species. Both of them Latinized, mainly Latinized, but nowadays we can also use some Greek words, etc. But it's a name that is universal. That's the most important aspect. And then, once you describe a species, so you give it, you categorize it into a generic name and a species, then you give a description of it. In animals, these descriptions nowadays can be done in English, in German, in Italian. Most of the most important languages can accommodate this. But in plants, no. In plants, even this description needs to be done in Latin. This is quite a distinction between zoology and botany. You know, the botanists are still... quite with their Latin descriptions, you know, which in a way is good as well, you know, because sometimes when I find a description in Chinese, I have a big problem to translate that into English. So, and this was a breakthrough, I would say, because with this system then, a scientist from South America and a scientist in Malta could communicate on a unique species, and they both know what we are referring to. This was really something.
When we say endemic species, what exactly do we mean by that?
All right. So whenever you are using the word endemic, you always need to associate this word with a region. So we can say, for example, the carob tree is endemic to the Mediterranean territory, which means that the carob tree is present throughout the Mediterranean region and is native to this region. All right, let's go more specific. We can say that the Maltese national plant is endemic to the Maltese Islands. Therefore, this particular plant is only found in Malta, Gozo, and Comino, and nowhere else in the world. So you always associate endemism with a particular territory, something which is endemic to a particular territory. In terms of insects, we've got several species which are actually endemics to the Maltese Islands, only found in Malta. And we find an even higher number which are endemic to Malta and Sicily, you know, to this southern European territory, I would say.
Far enough for them to fly, perhaps?
Some of them, yes, but the most interesting insects are those that have lost the ability to fly. And therefore, because they can no longer move from Malta to Sicily or to some nearby island, therefore they remain isolated. And after hundreds of years, because they are isolated and they can no longer mate with their
Sicilian counterparts,
counterparts, therefore there is a tendency for them that they could produce characteristics which are different from the others, because possibly of some environmental changes that there are between Malta and Sicily, you know, and things like that.
Why would endemic species be created?
No, because perhaps here in Malta there would be a slightly different environment from that found there. And because of this isolation, over a period of a long time, then these could actually evolve in something which is different from their ancestors. Therefore, you have these two things which, because they are separated, because they are possibly in slightly different environmental, therefore they can produce new things.
Before you mentioned the fact that perhaps the number that we know about is the tip of the iceberg, and even here in Malta that might be the same. How do you, as an entomologist, you and your peers, your fellow entomologists in Malta, how do you actually go about looking? I presume you're always looking for new species.
Yes, well, it's a tough job, I would say, because you have...
Where do you look? Where do you go?
As we said, because of the high population density in Malta, you always need to go to places where there is still virgin land, virgin garrigues, you know.
Does that exist anywhere?
Yes, it exists, yes. We still have places that are unique, I would say. We should do our utmost in order to conserve these places, because it's in these places that most of this species richness would be found and is being found. So we go there with our nets, with a good eye, observing things, you know, looking at things, collecting some material in order to be studied in the lab, because first you have to go in the right places. You've got to use the right techniques in order to collect what you are trying to study. Sometimes you have to go at the right time of the year. Sometimes you go for 16 times in the same location and you don't find what you need. And then one fine day you go and you find it because you are there at the right time, at the right place, at the right everything, you know. So it's tough already finding things, especially in Malta. Once you find things using that particular technique and at the right time, then you need to study them. And this is hours and hours of laboratory work, you know. You need to consult publications, you need to compare your material with material deposited in museums. We don't have here deposition of material except for some Maltese things. So very often you have to go to foreign natural history museums in order to compare your material, especially if we are talking that you have found something which is new to science. And you know, you have all this. And then once you've done all this, then you need to publish your results, in a journal which is accessible not only to Maltese scholars, but it's accessible to the entire scientific world out there. Because otherwise, if you never publish your research, you're doing very little for the entire community. If you don't communicate your results,
it's really all for nothing. What about alien species, about which we've heard quite a bit?
Yeah.
In this article, you mentioned about three of them, and
yeah.
I was very interested to read about how they actually got to Malta.
Various routes, I would say. Let's start with a definition of what is an alien species, because some people may think that they are coming from Mars or Jupiter, I don't know. So these alien species would be species, organisms, which are coming from a completely different territory, you know. They are coming to, let's say, to our island, to Malta, so they are not native to Malta because they are coming from somewhere else, and if they find a suitable niche, a suitable habitat, they start reproducing here, and they start making babies over here. Now, at least what we know is that from all this influx of things that are coming to Malta or to other countries, only a small percentage are actually able to survive, to find those conditions where, or those plants where they can feed on. And usually this figure is roughly between 10 to 15%. If it was more than that, it would be really problematic. Roots. I don't know, roots can be many. Let's say an example so that people can really understand. Red palm weevil. Red palm weevil is native to parts of Asia, you know. Palms have been, because it's a commercial plant, everyone is buying palms from all over. Probably these palms, infested palms from Asia, went to a particular EU country, and from there, this particular country started selling these plants in other EU countries, and the problem is that the larva of this species is actually inside the trunk. So even at the border inspection posts, whatever, you will not see the damage, or it's very difficult to see any damage. So once then you have your palms, you bought a palm, inside it you've got this larva, which is eating the palm from the inside. If this happens to produce an adult, at least you need a male and a female. If there is a good environmental situation where this can survive, this will survive. It will. Every single female will produce more than 300 eggs. And therefore, and the worst thing is the following, that these things that come in, these aliens that come in, very often there are no natural enemies in the territory where they have been introduced, and therefore their numbers are not checked. Therefore, they very often produce a pest. They become pest species, and
so they wouldn't necessarily be in their ordinary environment where they would have predators and keep their numbers down.
Exactly, that's it. You know, therefore their numbers will simply explode. Mm-hmm. You know, very often it's interesting, because very often these alien species, once they are introduced into a new territory, they for 1, 2, 3, maybe 5 years they are in that particular territory, almost hidden there. No one really knows about their existence there. And in this period of time, what is happening is that they are trying to interact with the new environment that they have. They are actually changing slightly their DNA, and there are actually studies that have been done on this. They are actually changing their DNA in order to have new interactions with this new territory, with this new environment, with the new flora and fauna found in this territory. Once these new interactions, new DNA is established, it may take a year, it may take 2, 3, 4 years, then the species explodes. Another example was, for example, I'm seeing there a very nice photo.
Yes, I'm so sorry, listeners can't see it. It's an incredible photo of the longhorn beetle.
It's a longhorn beetle. It's almost 3 inches in length. And this beetle most probably came to Malta via timber industry. Timber coming from Central Africa, and this timber was infected with this beetle. This beetle escaped, and it started attacking all our trees of Morus alba, yes, and Morus nigra as well. And this is the black mulberry and white mulberry, mostly on the black mulberry. Trees which are 120 years old, they simply, with a couple of these... Immediately, you know, in less than 6 months, which is a pity. It's really a pity.
In the last minute that we have, perhaps you could talk about the usefulness of certain insects.
We can say a lot about the usefulness.
We need more than a minute.
I mean, if we look at the honeybee is the most important insect when it comes to pollination. I mean, most of the agricultural products that we eat today are insect pollinated, and most of them need to be pollinated by the honeybee. In fact, Einstein once said that if we lose the honeybee, probably mankind will only survive for another 4 years. So we really have to, if we have only a last minute, what I want to say is that we have this network. Biodiversity is a network between everything, all living organisms. And we have to do our utmost that we keep this network as healthy as possible. If we do this, then we have no problems. If we don't do this,
we might not even survive. Well, thank you so much, Dr. David Mifsud, for coming on University Matters to talk to us about things entomological.
Thanks, Patricia.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.